I want to start out this morning with a couple of questions. First of all, has anyone here ever been in a romantic relationship? Got a few? Show of hands? Good. 12 of you, I think. Okay. Second question, has anyone here ever been confused about how such relationships are supposed to work? Okay. A few of you? All right. Finally, has anybody here ever thought for just a moment that romantic relationships might be more trouble than they're worth? You ever think that? Okay. I think just for a moment, you know, you might have done that. Good. That means I picked a good topic because this is Valentine's Day weekend, as we know, and I thought I'd spend a little time talking about love and relationships and all of those special people in our life who make things so wonderful and exciting and confusing and annoying and absolutely worth it all the time. Because if we can learn how to share life and love with the special people in our life and do it in a healthy, intelligent but still passionate way, both our life and our relationships become much more fulfilling for us. So first of all, let's talk about our physical need for relationships. Sometimes we're way up here when we talk about relationships. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. We all have a physical need for relationships. Now, we may not think about it in these terms or all the time, but the truth of the matter is every single one of us came into this world physically and intimately connected to another human being. Now, we may not remember all the details of our birth intellectually, but we do remember it at the soul level. There's something in us that remembers that connection that we had with our mother. There's something in us that remembers the safety and the security and the warmth and the closeness of those first few days before and after our birth. So we were conceived in an intimate act. We were nurtured within another person's body for 9 months, give or take, and we were totally helpless for the first few years that we were here on the planet. Or somebody once said, we're born naked, wet, and hungry, and then it gets worse. You know, I always thought that was great. So then, beginning shortly after we were born and as the months unfolded, we started to explore our own individuality. Instead of just being a part of another person, we started noticing boundaries. We started noticing all of the different ways that we were separated from the world and the people around us. And as every year went by, we started to assert more and more of that independence. Anybody who's ever had a 2-, 3-, or 4-year-old understands that idea of independence. Now, as teenagers, we really started to push the envelope. We did everything we could to make ourselves different. In the 60s, we grew our hair long. In the 70s, they cut the hair short. In the 80s and 90s, they dyed it purple. You know, whatever you had to do to make yourself stand out. But we also looked around and tried to work our way into groups where we felt accepted, but we tried to pick groups that were not a part of the mainstream, and we especially avoided any groups that were acceptable to our parents. We tried not to get involved in that, many of us. So as young adults, after that, after our teen years, we started making choices that reflected our personal identity even more. We made choices that reflected who we thought we were or who we wanted to be. We made our own unique choices about the kind of clothes we wore, about the kind of car that we would drive, the kind of music we listened to, all of those different things. We carefully chose our opinions on all sorts of different issues, all because we wanted to express our individuality. But right about that time, as young adults, though we may not have realized it, something interesting started happening. We also started to negotiate with the rest of the world. In other words, we started trading off little pieces of our hard-won individuality so that we could feel like we belonged somewhere or to get something from the people and society around us so that we could feel more secure. For example, we had gotten our hard-earned independence, but then we got ourselves a job, so that meant we traded a little bit of our independence for money and security. Or maybe we joined an activist group or a political party as a young adult so that we could feel like we were making our voice heard in the community, but then we owed an obligation to the rules and things of that party. Or maybe we joined a church, I mean a normal one you can bring your grandmother to, you know, one of those and that, so that we could feel more secure in figuring out what God wanted us to do with our life. So there was a trade-off there. We gave up our Sunday mornings for going to church. And those were just the social trade-offs. In our personal life, once we started connecting with other people, maybe the trade-off took the form of getting married, which gave up a certain amount of freedom, or getting into a committed relationship. Maybe we then had children, or maybe we bought a house with someone, which created financial obligations, and we started to restrict our freedoms. We did this because we were looking for something that our individuality did not seem to be giving to us. So the trade-off was try to form a connection with other people. We were looking for someone or something to help us to feel complete, to help us to feel loved and respected and appreciated. Now, we didn't know how to get these things by ourselves because no one had ever taught us how to do it. In fact, many of us have been taught when we grew up that the job and the church and the marriage and the children and the family and the relationships and all that other stuff were the only way that we could be complete, the only way that we could be fulfilled. That's what our grandparents and our parents taught us. So you could say that we sold our individuality because we thought we had no other choice. That was the only way that we knew to be able to try to find this thing that everybody told us that we were supposed to be looking for that seemed to be missing inside of us. But even though we did all the things that we were told that we were supposed to do, and we had all the stuff that we thought we were supposed to have, the problem was something in us recognized that it wasn't working. It wasn't enough. There was something in there that surprised us and disappointed us. We thought we had been sold a bill of goods. So we still felt empty and alone and dissatisfied, but we didn't want to admit it because then it would seem like we were ungrateful for all of the things that the world had given to us. So those of us who were good little boys and girls, I was one of those, proceeded through our life not quite feeling connected to the people that we had given ourselves up to, but not exactly feeling free like we were when we were individuals either. And those of us who were more rebellious, was that a few of you? How many rebellious people we had out there? A few? They flocked to these places, you know, these kind of things. Go figure, you know? I was passive-aggressive. I wasn't rebellious, you know. But the people who were rebellious tried everything they could do. Alcohol, drugs, sex, religion, parties, shopping, travel. Did I leave anything out? You know, that's most of it. In a desperate effort to get rid of the loneliness, to feel loved, to feel secure and appreciated and fulfilled. But none of that stuff seemed to work either. There was nothing out there that could fill the emptiness that we felt in here. Now, if anyone here thinks I am talking about you, I am. I'm also talking about me, okay? But I want to make it clear that there is nothing wrong with any of us. All of this stuff I'm talking about is simply a normal part of what many perfectly well-adjusted people in the world have had to overcome in order to grow into loving, sharing, wholesome, compassionate, affectionate human beings, which is precisely the way that the power of life as love is meant to be expressed through us. And the good news is, no matter what we have to go through to get to the place where all the love that is in us starts showing up around us, there is a guaranteed 100% foolproof way for every one of us to experience greater love in our life, that kind of connection that we're all seeking for. That's what I want to talk about this morning. You see, this constant inner desire that we all have to love and to be loved is the most powerful mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual drive that we have. It begins before we're born, while we're in the womb, maybe before that, and it will undoubtedly continue after we die because love never dies, and spiritually speaking, neither do we. So it's got to continue after that. But with that being said, what some of us would still like to know is this. If love is such a natural, wonderful thing that we are born with, then why isn't it easier? Okay, that's kind of what I want to know. Why are so many of our most difficult and devastating life situations centered around relationship problems? Over half of my counseling and treatment work deals with relationships. It's unbelievable. You're always talking with your friends about relationships. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. You see, what we don't realize, especially in our early years, when we're trying to find a balance between our inner world, our inner desires, and the outer world, both of which can be fairly confusing, is that we don't know what we don't know. That's part of the problem. Now, this is true about a lot of areas in our life, but it's especially true about our ability to give and receive love. For some strange reason, we seem to think that we ought to know instinctively, automatically, from day one, everything there is to know about finding, expressing, and enjoying love just because we happen to be born with a strong desire for love and all of the necessary body parts. We think we're supposed to know what we should do. But the truth is, by the time we are ready, or by the time we think that we are ready to get involved in a romantic relationship, our thoughts and our beliefs and our opinions about love have more than likely become slightly skewed, and in some cases completely warped, by those people in our life who were supposed to be teaching us how wonderful true love can be. Now, I know there are a few exceptions, but when it comes to loving relationships, most of us did not have real good role models when we were growing up. And I don't just mean what we learned about love from our parents. Some people had better than others, and some people had worse. I also mean watching our neighbors and our aunts and our uncles and our friends and their parents, what we learned in school when people started dating, books, movies, televisions, all the places that we learned about relationships. In the process of being exposed to so many different relationship models, some of them wonderful, but a lot of them abusive, apathetic, unstable, or addictive, a lot of the ones we saw, it was hard for us to get a clear image in our mind and in our heart of what a normal, loving, and supportive relationship could actually look like. Which means at a very impressionable age, when our hormones were raging, and at a time when we were most sensitive and insecure about how much love we were able to give and how much love we in fact deserved, our mind, this incredible creative thing that we have, was completely filled with what can only be described as absolute nonsense. We got it from our friends, we got it from our parents, we got it from school, we got it from church, we were getting that from everywhere. And much more of that nonsense than we would like to admit found a warm and fertile place in our youthful romantic imagination. The problem was we didn't realize that it was nonsense. We thought that was the way that things were supposed to work. And as someone said, I think it was Mark Twain who said it, it isn't the things we don't know that cause us the most problems, it's the things we think we do know that ain't necessarily so. That's the things that cause us problems. So armed with this wealth of ignorance and misinformation, we launched our cute little selves out into the world, you know, confident that we knew exactly what kind of love we wanted and how to get it, and equally confident that we knew what every potential lover we would ever meet wanted and how to give it to him. We thought we knew. Unfortunately, when the results of our initial romantic adventures turned out to be less than spectacular, or in some cases spectacular in a disastrous kind of way, some people did that, we were confused, we were frustrated, and in some cases we became very angry and resentful and even became cynical or disillusioned. Which is all very sad if you think about it, because the only problem that we really had was that we had not yet learned the truth about sharing life and love. You see, too many people in the world think that there's something wrong with them or that there's something wrong with everyone else in the world just because they are not getting the love that they want in their life. Now, sure, they may be going through a lot of different, getting involved in a lot of relationships. They may be sleeping their way through the Atlanta phone book, you know. Or if they are lucky, they may be surrounding themselves with a lot of other perfectly nice but clueless people who are also looking for some meaningful love in their life. But everybody still feels lonely. Now, in most cases, this is because we have been conditioned to believe from a very early age that the only way we can attract the love that we want is by making ourselves attractive and available. That's what all the advertisements tell us. In other words, we try to attract love the way that a flower attracts a bee. You know, look good enough and the bee's going to come directly to you. And if that's what we're doing, we should not be surprised when the only thing we get out of our relationships is pollinated or stung, okay, if you're bringing a bee, okay? That's what you got to know. Now, when we go about trying to attract love or trying to create a loving relationship in a way that is not in harmony with the deepest spiritual gifts that life has to offer, we can't help but create problems for ourselves. Now, we may attract a little bit of love every now and then, just sort of randomly, but it's probably just going to be enough to whet our appetite, just enough to let us know what we're really, really missing. But the greatest danger is that by simply making a few mistakes in our initial romantic endeavors based on our lack of knowledge or awareness, we may start to look at the problems we've created and come up with some very inaccurate conclusions. For example, when we find ourselves caught up in the drama of a difficult relationship or maybe a series of difficult relationships, you know, same person with different faces, that kind of thing, there is a tendency to think that we might be unlovable or maybe that we don't deserve to have a loving relationship. Now, this kind of belief can even creep into our consciousness when we are established in an already perfectly wonderful relationship, and that can be very destructive. We may start thinking that the person we're with doesn't love us enough, or that that anyone who is attracted to us has bad judgment, or they're flawed, or something else. We may even start to believe, and a lot of people do, that love is hard to find, but it's even harder to keep. Something's always going to mess it up. Once we let those kind of ideas take over our consciousness, because our thoughts are creative, that's what we talk about here, and that's where a lot of this exists, we end up creating a self-fulfilling prophecy. And as time goes by, we enter into every potential relationship believing that the only way we can keep even a little bit of love for ourselves is to do anything, be anything, or endure anything just so we don't lose what little bit of love that we managed to find so far. Now, none of this is the truth as far as our divine being or as far as God or Spirit is concerned, but it becomes our truth in relationships because we buy into it. When we believe that there's not much love in the world, that's exactly what we end up with, not much love in our life. Now, as with so many other areas of our life, in order to bring more love into our experience, there isn't something we need to get, there's just something that we need to learn. There's something that we need to know. And what we need to learn and to know is this. Before we try to latch on to someone that we hope will give us all the love that we have felt so sadly lacking in our life, we had better take a good long look at this hole that is inside of us that we are trying to fill. And if we do, what we will find is that this hole has to be filled from the inside before we can hold on to anything that comes to us from the outside. You know, looking for love when we are feeling empty or lonely or inadequate is like going grocery shopping on an empty stomach. You ever do that? Because you're hungry, you show up there, and we fill up our basket with all sorts of junk food that we don't need, with things that look real tasty on the outside, but when you get them home, they're empty calories, that kind of thing, you know? That's why when we get home, we realize that we don't want most of the stuff that we brought home with us, okay? Now project this over to a Friday night out, okay? You know, in the same way, needy people invariably make bad romantic choices. Unfortunately, most of them don't realize this till they're on their honeymoon, and by then, you got yourself a problem. You know, it's a universal truth that we have to learn to give love freely before we can ever hope to attract it. Every spiritual teacher has told us told us this. The good news is we are all born with all of the love that we could ever need in here to give all of the love we will ever need to give out there. But we have to give of ourselves intelligently and confidently, because it doesn't work if we're coming from a needy place. We have to love ourselves freely and unconditionally before anyone can love us, because that's where it all starts. We also have to learn how to love life as much as we possibly can, and how to live our life fully every single moment instead of sitting around waiting for our soulmate to show up so we can start enjoying life that way, or at the other extreme, grabbing the first single opportunity that goes along and say, come on, we're going to go play. You know, when someone comes into our life who seems like a good possibility, or when someone is already in our life and we are trying to make that relationship even better, we don't have to trade away our self-respect just for a little bit of affection. Any person of quality would not come near a relationship on those terms. We're going to be much better off if we continue to demonstrate self-respect and a passion for life while seeking to build or restore or embellish a relationship that is based on trust and mutual respect. That way, as the relationship evolves, whether from the beginning or even from an established relationship, we won't have to wonder if they really love us. And we won't have to worry about how we will possibly live without them if they do decide to leave, which is entirely up to them. Because a healthy relationship, whether it lasts a week, a year, or a lifetime, any of which can be very fulfilling if you do it right, you know, any of these relationships will have been based, if we do it in a healthy way, on two complete individuals giving all of themselves in love instead of two needy people just showing a part of themselves in order to get love. When we are awakened, and I love that word, to the value and the power and the desirability and the honesty and the spirituality of this love we have that we are meant to share, and we all have it in massive quantities, when we get this, we are transformed as human beings. We are fulfilled by the giving of that love to someone who recognizes and respects its value. Its value. Now, the law of giving and receiving applies to love just as much as it does to prosperity. When we feel free to share our love in abundance, in a healthy way, we start to see very quickly that we no longer need to negotiate with anyone to get love in return. Because the universe, get this, the universe is compelled to freely return love whenever it is given unconditionally and freely out to the universe. It is compelled to return that love to us. But that love has to be given from us with complete honesty. We cannot fool ourselves, and we cannot change the way that the law works. This loving spiritual presence that lives in us knows us far too well. It knows all of our tricks. It knows all of our excuses. So if we share our love out of fear or out of selfishness or out of an effort to deceive or to manipulate someone else, we will get back exactly what we give out. Exactly what we give out. Now, one final point I want to touch on. Sometimes we become obsessed with trying to make someone love us when they have absolutely no interest in doing so. We do that. And even though it hurts when that happens, the principle I'm talking about remains the same. When dealing with love, all we have control over is the giving of it. Not the receiving, the giving. If we give, once again, in a healthy way, we will always get love in return, but it may not show up in the way or from the place that we expect it. That's why we need to keep our eyes and our mind and our heart open, because someone may show up in our life once someone else has made the decision not to return our life. Someone may show up in our life who will make a difference. And the person who has chosen not to return our life We can bless them and release them and continue to love them from whatever distance seems appropriate. But then we should be ready and willing to open ourselves to someone else who demonstrates that they are capable of appreciating our honest love and returning it to us, multiplied abundantly. Because, as my teacher Kennedy Schultz from this platform said, and he wrote it in his book also, he said, "Love is not an emptiness longing to be filled. It is a fullness pressing to be released." Love is not an emptiness longing to be filled. It is a fullness pressed to be released. That means our complete willingness to only share our truest and deepest feelings of love with someone who returns them in kind is the greatest gift that we can ever give to a world that needs all the love it can get. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Relax your shoulders. Let's be completely present in this moment, in this place, in consciousness together, recognizing that love is a gift, but it is a gift we have already received. We have received the love of Spirit. That love has taken form not within us, but as us. Love is not something we have, it is what we are. Because God is love, Spirit is love, and we are Spirit, then we are love. We are life expressing itself in joyful, incredible, magnificent ways, and we are all connected, we are all one, but each one of us is capable of creating a deep love for ourselves, a deep love for life, and to have that love recognized so we can enjoy incredible love with another being. This is the power we have. And when we find that love, as we stay centered in the spiritual truth of it, as we stay centered in the joy of sharing honestly and openly, without judgment, without conditions, without criticism, that love only grows. It only grows, it becomes stronger, and two people become more than one plus one. And they don't just become one, they become one with all of life, and the love that they feel changes the world. Not just their lives, it changes everyone they meet and everything they do. This is the power we have. So I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, and in this silence, in your mind's eye, first of all, see the person you need to love the most, yourself, at that center. And if you have someone in your life that you deeply care for, see that person there with you. And if you are waiting for the right person, looking for that person, ready to attract that person, simply see the beautiful space, a beautiful white light next to you that is ready to be filled with a person who is ready to love you as much as you love yourself and you love life. Take these few moments for yourself in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a true understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this as our truth. We accept love as a wonderful experience that we are now ready for, that we now have, that we now allow to grow and expand from us to every person we know, whether it's the one special person, our family, our friends, or every other spiritual being. This is the power we have for one another. This is how we create a world that is transformed. This is how we end war, peace, and suffering through love. This is our gift. We accept it. And with gratitude, we release it into consciousness, knowing that this is so for us from this moment on, and so it is.